Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Velkommen til Uno. Vi befinner oss ikke i studio, men derimot i en taxi. Du kan jo si hvor vi på vei, Fredrik.
Vi I solfylte Manchester på vei til selveste René Meulensten. Det et navn som kanskje ikke den mest kjente, men det et veldig kjent navn.
Ja, grunnen til at jeg ville at du skulle si hvem vi skulle til fordi jeg alltid litt usikker på uttalen.
Ja, jeg jo. Så jeg synes det var litt dårlig gjort å sende den rett over til meg. Og så vil jeg jo gjerne at du da validerer at det var riktig måte å si det på. Var det sånn du ville sagt, Eivind?
Ja, det nok på samme uttale som deg. Så får vi se, ja. Vi blir nok satt på plass hvis vi tar feil. For dette jo en av Fergusons mest betrodde menn. Og du ikke det uten at du kan stå med rak rygg og stå opp for deg selv.
Nei, på ingen måte. Så vi skal vi spørre han hvordan det sies, eller skal vi gå for René?
Jeg tror vi gambler, og så ser vi hvordan det går.
Ja,
da får vi pleier å gjøre.
Ja, vi gjør det I dag også.
Vi gleder oss veldig, Fredrik, og det fordi du kommer ikke så mye nærmere Sir Alex Ferguson enn å snakke med René Meulensten eller Mike Phelan, som var så nær skotten I hans beste år.
Ja, og han har garantert mange historier, mye innsikt. Han var en del av et helt vanvittig suksessrikt United-lag og en suksessrik periode. Så det blir spennende å høre hvor mye vi... Eller ikke spennende å høre hvor mye vi får, det blir spennende å høre hva vi får. Fordi det garantert veldig interessant det han har å dele og si om akkurat den perioden der som vi hele tiden snakker om og lengter oss tilbake til.
Ja, og en ting jo det han og Ferguson gjorde på feltet på den tida, og stjernene de skulle håndtere, og historiene som ligger der. En annen ting jo dagens United, René Meulensten, fortsatt aktiv, assistenttrener for landslaget til Australia. Mm. Bor jo da åpenbart I Manchester, siden det dit vi nå skal. Vi skal jo rett og slett hjem til René. Mm. Og ganske sikker på at han følger Erik Ten Hag og Manchester United meget tett, så høre hva han tenker om spillestilen til Ten Hag, hvor man står etter ett år, nysigneringene som gjort, ikke minst hva som skal gjøres I sommer.
Mm, utvilsomt, og Tor Christian Carlsen, sportsdirektør, har jo jobbet tett med René I Maccabi Haifa I Israel, og Tor Christian forteller også at han sjelden har sett en bedre trener på feltet enn det René utrolig dyktig til å organisere, variere og designe spennende øvelser og voldsom innlevelse I tillegg, så dette en mann som får gode skussmål også for sin måte å trene spillerne på feltet, så ikke bare Fergusons høyrearm og støttespiller det var også en som var veldig delaktig på treningsfeltet og som I veldig stor grad bidro til den suksessen han hadde så dette blir spennende.
Hva slags sjokolade har du kjøpt?
Det ble melkesjokolade.
Klassisk norsk melkesjokolade skal vi overrekke René Meulensten.
Jeg tenkte at stakkaren skulle få slippe både fruktet og mokkabønner I dag. Uansett hvor glade vi I Eivind, så det noe med å lese klima her da.
Det mye som tyder på at mange av lytterne ville tatt det som en straff.
Det helt korrekt. Vi spurte på Instagram mokkabønner, fruktnøtt eller nei takk verken heller. Og det var jo den som vant Eivind. Så nei, René skal få sjokolade, norsk melkesjokolade også. Det vet jeg også at Kath I resepsjonen på Carrington liker veldig, veldig godt.
Vi nærmer oss. Vi skal bruke de siste minuttene på å terpe litt engelsk, tror jeg. For dette her, det vi litt spente på. Vi
oh yes, we really need to do that, Eivind.
Vi har stått I engelsk begge to, men vi skal være helt ærlige på at det å lede en podcast Med Meilenstein på engelsk, det blir litt annerledes enn det vi vant til med Jon Martin I vårt trygge studio.
Jeg tenker det lov å ha litt nerver da, men vi forbereder oss og hører det fra snart.
God fornøyelse.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Come in, boys.
Can't believe it. Good ball, by the hell.
Thank you so much for having us, Rene. We're now in your memorabilia room, and we're going to talk to you about your time at Manchester United and how things are going today. We're really looking forward to it.
Brilliant, and thanks. You know, I thought it was the best place for your guys to come here. Easy, relaxed, you know, so let's do it.
We have brought this little gift for you.
Oh, look at this.
Have you...
Melk chocolate.
Yeah.
That's like exactly it? How we would say it in Holland. Yeah, melk chocolate.
So absolutely. In our podcast, we have this chocolate discussion, really.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Fetish about chocolate.
Yeah. Oh, great.
Do you have any favorites? Any go-to chocolates?
Not really. We always have the certain chocolates here that's called Cadbury's, I think.
Yeah,
the one with the purple kind of things, but yeah, quite nice.
So it's the three of us and your dog.
Yeah, it's Maxi. Rene. He obviously wants to join in a podcast. Maxi.
We're sat here in a sunny Wilmslow, and you've been here since 2001 in the same house as well.
Yep.
Do you feel like a Dutch Mancunian?
Do I feel like a Dutch Mancunian? Yeah, it's a good question. Yeah, yeah, I think I do.
You sound like one.
Well, that's for other people to decide, but they still sometimes say that I don't know. I just, you know, I just speak the way that I speak, but it's other people that sometimes say that I have certain pronunciations that they think, oh, you can hear you're a Manc.
Yeah.
Well, so be it. I'm proud Manc then.
Yeah.
Okay, Rene, I'm sitting here looking at the picture of you and Sir Alex Ferguson. You're now you're soon publishing your second book, United Sir Alex and Me. We've seen the cover. Can you reveal what's inside?
Yeah, it's a book long time in the making. I believe that I've obviously previously brought out a book, but that was more a real coaching book, you know, for coaches. This one is more of you know, my story. The story of the book is about United. It's about obviously Sir Alex and me working with Sir Alex.
Mm.
And it's about myself and the journey that I've taken, you know, how I got to United, my time at United, and a little bit what's happened after that. The reason why, because I've got that request so often, and I thought, you know, I need to start thinking about it. And like I said, we worked hard on it for over 2 years in the making. Wayne Barton, who's obviously written a lot of United books, has helped me a lot. Although I have to say that predominantly most of the things that I've, you know, when it was down on paper, I've sort of fine-tuned it or rewritten it. And the aim is basically, especially for United fans, I want to give them a really good insight about obviously myself and the journey, how I got to United, but also I want to give them an opportunity to have a peek behind the curtain of success. Why was United so successful in and around that period?
I think that question is here in the manuscript.
It will come, so we will reveal that. But that is the thing. I want people to write the book that have a passion for Manchester United to say at the end of the book, well, that was really interesting.
Hmm.
You know, I didn't know that, or I didn't know that. That was yeah, I can understand now what were the key factors, you know, why United was so successful.
That's the stories we hope to get from you today. But let's start with the most important question we'll ask you. How hard did your heart jump when Phelan popped that balloon at Stamford Bridge?
Christ. I still remember it vividly. Because you could see in the clip, I was so, because there was so, I think the linesman was in front of me because I was constantly changing to looking to see what's happening. And we were sort of going forward into hopefully a good attack. And I was oblivious of what Mick was doing. And he was just obviously saw the balloon, you know, coming towards him, and he absolutely smashed it. And it was the loudest bang you can imagine. And honestly, I jumped, and so did Sir Alex Ferguson. And I said to him, I says, I think we've been shot at. I'm not going to repeat what Sir Alex said, but you can see it from the reaction. But it is, every time it's hilarious. And
it's a hit on YouTube.
Eh?
It's a hit on YouTube.
Yeah, it definitely is. And when that happened in that season, it was the same year as we went to Japan for the World Cup. And Simon Wells and the video analyst at the time, we were preparing the meeting for one of the games. And obviously Sir Alex walked in, you know, because we always discussed, this is what we're going to show. This is what we're going to talk about. Is there anything you need to add or whatever? So when we finished, and I said to him, it says, boss, have you seen the clip where McFeeling pops the balloon? I says, it's ridiculous. We play in Chelsea, such an important game, and he's playing with balloons. No, I haven't seen it. Put it on. So Simon put it on the big screen, and honestly, Sir Alex was absolutely in stitches. And he said, show it again, show it again, show it again. And we were absolutely howling of laughter. Then Mick Phelan walks in. Fucking hell, Mick. You know what I mean? What do you think? So Mick was laughing. Then the players came in, and he just kept showing it. It was absolutely brilliant. All the players were in stitches as well, which was a really, really great moment, I thought. It's like simple little things you don't plan.
Yeah.
But they're so important for team spirit and team bonding, because laughter is one of the most important ingredients. And so Alex Ferguson had plenty of that, I can tell you that.
So even though he looked angry, he made it like...
He saw it back, it was just hilarious. Yeah. Fantastic.
Fantastic, yeah.
It's now 10 years since he retired and you also left the club. Me and Frederick, we tend to look back on those memories that we cherish that you have on the wall here. How is it for you to look back today on how you and Ferguson and Mick and all the success you achieved together?
It fulfills me with just pure joy when I think back and when I look back at the pictures. And like you said, the pictures, you know, it tells you more than 1,000 words. And that picture behind me with me and Sir Alex, I think, is one of the most beautiful pictures I have with him. And it sums a lot in that picture. If you look at the picture, there is that connection, there is that communication, there is that whatever. And that was
nice smile as well.
Yeah, but that was, like I said, that was a running theme through our work. You know, it was just fantastic. But it is, like I said, pure joy, fulfillment, satisfaction. Yes, there have been moments where you wished things turned out a little bit better, but in hindsight, I couldn't have wished for anything, you know, more. And you look back, and because I've been at United obviously for a long, long time, since 2001, so these were the sort of last 6 years, but you don't, and we just have no inkling. We just carried on year after year. It was, you know, it was just a train that just carried on, and we stopped at the station and we looked at the trophies we won and off to the next one and load up with more trophies. And that's how we looked at it. If it then comes to an end, then suddenly you think, oh, you know, but these memories tell the stories. And I think that the book, like I said, hopefully it will, because it's a nice way for me sort of to put my feelings and things and ideas on a piece of paper and have something to look back on.
It was obviously a lot of staff members, but let's talk about Mike Phelan, you, and Sir Alex Ferguson. Can you give us some insight into what kind of roles you had? How did you share on the different roles?
It was very, very helpful when eventually Sir Alex Ferguson made the decision to promote Mick to assistant manager and me to first team coach. Was that he called me in his office one day, and he said, obviously, Rene, you know, Mick's going to be assistant manager. And obviously part of his role was also to look a little bit more after all those players when we had international duties, you know, where did they go, when they were coming back, and commercial stuff, something I didn't have to do and to bother about, which was great. I said, I just want you to concentrate on the sessions. I don't have to tell you how to run a session. That's all brilliant. But he said, if I close my eyes and I see the best Man United in front of my eyes, this is what I see. And he had a flip chart, written down a lot of stuff. And he said, you know, from a defensive point of view, I want to make sure that we are able to press really high, aggressively, when we want to do that. On other times, I want us to drop a little bit deeper in a block and then press a certain area or a certain player, and then we can hit the spaces that we leave. If we have to sometimes press really deep or press defend really deep from a block to defend, making sure we limit giving chances away, et cetera, because clean sheets are very important to me. But then when in turnovers, can we then counter and break? And then obviously everything is done on a quick transition. Obviously looking after set pieces. Next pace. In possession, he says, and that's an important part of the game, is that all the good teams have rhythm. They create rhythm and they maintain that sort of rhythm, or they change that rhythm. So in build-up, you have a different rhythm in trying to get and then, you know, go forward. And within that possession, I want players to understand, always think forward, look forward, play forward. He absolutely hated it when players played the ball back and he could have gone forward or square.
Old Trafford as well.
Huh?
At Old Trafford as well.
He absolutely hated it. So there was an element that, you know, I wanted to get the players subconsciously. Just think about it. There's a lot of subconscious training going on in think forward, look forward, play forward. So if you already got that in your mind, your first solution is to go forward. And if you go forward, you normally, most of the time, hurt the opposition. So that was important. And it says, when we break in lines or we get into behind the thing, it's about that we can, in condensed areas, we can switch to one-touch football. One touch and movement. You know, we go, you know, up, back, through. You know, bang, 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 runners. You know what I mean? Wide areas, can we create 1v1s? We've got players with a lot of individual skills. Can we create underlaps, overlaps? All opportunities to go and attack. And then the last page, which was the most important one, he said, this is when I see Man United attack. And he says, when I see them attack with pace, power, penetration and unpredictability. And it says, I want those things that I just showed you from a defensive point, possession and the attacking side, I want you to instill that in this group every training, whatever you do. So those were the key elements. So basically written down on 3 flip charts. And the best thing was of all was when he said that line about pace, power, penetration, unpredictability, he put a line. And he said, if that doesn't work, we gamble. And I absolutely love that. So that's where Fergie time comes in. And that's where we go, okay, now let's see what we can do, you know, from the last minute to the game. But for me, that was so helpful. Because now I knew, right, these are the ingredients. So whether we did a finishing session, all those things were in it. Pace, penetration, you know what I mean? I always set it up that those elements were in it. Condition possession game, condition games, wave games, all that. And if you look back to the games and the best games we played, that comes to my mind. You know, if you see them go, look at the Arsenal games when Rooney and Park and Ronaldo and all flying forward. That was directly from that. Came directly from the training ground. Because I did a lot of these wave games, you know, put mannequins in the middle of the park. You pick the ball up at the edge of the box and then you had to find your way to the next goal as quick as you could. You know what I mean?
Now, it's been an incredible feeling when you see what you're working on the training ground in the games.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Brilliant. There's so many moments. But yeah, so it was just a delight to work with. And the environment was obviously unique.
Yeah, because one thing is the winning culture that came with Ferguson. But you spoke about the relationship between the two of you and Mick, but also in the group of players. Rio Ferdinand has this video diary from one of the tours that's on YouTube today, and it's amazing to see how that group just gelled together. Yeah. And that's perhaps what we as fans have been missing the last 10 years. Like, where's the United culture? Where's the camaraderie? Where was there a secret behind that you as the staff worked on this, or was it just a unique group of players?
No, I think it was just a natural outcome from from Ferguson. You mentioned the most important word for any football team: culture. If you've got the wrong culture, you have no chance on success. So with culture comes identity. Mm. And how do you create that identity? You know, what do you want players to think when they talk about Manchester United? Now, in the Ferguson era, I think that was very clear. You know what I mean? Words like winning, attractive football, Fergie time, goals, all those things come to your mind. But also what it is in general, Ferguson came in this club and I came at the back end of it. He came in 86, you know, and then 20 years later, I joined him. So you've already built two successful teams. Took a while for him, obviously, that every know before he got going, but when he got going, it never stopped. But within that culture, that identity, it was all about winning. It was all about being competitive. It was all about respect. It was all about communication. You know, all those things. And then when we started winning, then obviously expectations changed. You know, the ambitions changed. Mm. Yeah. So now it was, now we've won the league once. No. You know what I mean? And then it comes back to, if you think about it, what a bold statement that he made by saying, I want to knock Liverpool off the perch.
Yeah.
And he'd think about it. Well, you know, that was like almost, yeah, hold on a minute.
That's a crazy thing to say.
You have, to, you have to win so many, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But by doing that, by putting a theme to it, that is like an undercurrent drive. So with that ambitions comes expectations. With expectations comes responsibilities. Yeah? And with expectations come standards. And with standards comes responsibilities. And that's, I think, was the real culture in that order. You know, we've got the highest of the highest ambitions. Therefore, we have the highest of highest expectations. To meet those expectations, we've got the highest of highest standards. Yeah? And because to meet those standards, we have to take our responsibilities as staff, as players, as manager, etc. Yeah. And that was the thing. So back to the culture thing, that was the identity. And that was also part of every player that came to United came for one reason only, to win. They knew we were going to win.
So they bought into this immediately.
100%.
But were there also players that you had to work with on a daily basis to try to get them into this culture? And if
well, not everybody is the same. Not everybody is the same, but I think it's very simple. Fredrik, the ones that were or needed a bit more attention or were just not up to scratch, they wouldn't survive.
No.
They'd just move on.
How long time did they get before they were axed?
Yeah, again, different to say. Some have had a little bit more chance than others, but...
But did you see it soon and started working with it immediately, or did they just...
No.
Did their own
No, way? But you know what the standards that the real top players put in there, and that is very, very, very high. And you can see very, very quickly if somebody can make that switch to it or not. And then if you're constantly on the knee, because the key is that you can only start 11 players. You know, and then at that time, you can only make three substitutions. But the substitutions can never be a reason where the quality drops.
Mm.
Not for the teams like Manchester United. But coming back to all that, what I just said is, one of the key, most vital things is laughing, enjoyment. What the manager, you know, put in this club, and the fun. That's what we always want. Apart from training well and doing well, there was a lot of fun, you know, a lot of laughter going on. But training was never a joke. You know what I mean? It was all you know, fantastic. And like I said, Sir Alex Ferguson, you know. There's a saying in Holland, you know, one day not laughed is one day not lived. But he definitely lived by that motto.
So Sir Alex had this in him, humour.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
can you give us an example of what kind of humour he had?
Well,
the first meeting between the two of you, I've heard he said he didn't like people from Holland.
No. He said that was funny because... It was, again, an amazing experience to go into Carrington for a starters. And like I said, like everybody does, the first one you meet is Kath at the reception.
Yeah.
She must be 210, I think, by now, but she's still going.
She loves the milk chocolates, by the way.
Yeah, I bet. And she's lovely. She is so nice. And she was so welcoming. But my first experience to walk into Alex's office when he had his training gear on and his shorts and his slippers, you know, And the European trophy was there, you know, the Champions League trophy. And I thought, Jesus. Anyway, so we had this chat, but on the last day, so I stayed for 5 days, and on the last day, so we had this chat and how it was, and So Alex was really upbeat and really positive. He says, there's only one thing I don't really like about you, Dutch. You speak better English than me. And he said, I bet you, I says, half the players, they don't understand me what I'm saying. And I said, that's probably why you're so successful. And he said, scandalous, get out. But that's the sort of stuff he was like. If you would be in a canteen and you just happened to stand next to him making a cup of tea, you know, I bet you 100% he would just go with his little spoon in the cup and then put it on top of your hand. You know what I mean? You know, like that. He would do things like that, or put a lot of, you know, like with a lot of people, when people go and have a bowl of soup, put a lot of salt in there, you know. Somebody. There's plenty of examples, but he loved to laugh. He absolutely loved it. And that relaxed everybody.
Yeah.
I always say, you know, and that is the amazing thing for me, my time at Manchester United. Like I spoke about the ambitions and the expectations, and they are the highest. With that comes pressure. I never felt any of that pressure. And I don't think the players did as such. And that is an amazing thing, that you want to achieve the highest, but there's no pressure. There's just this total commitment and desire. Because as soon as there comes pressure, and it's the wrong one, fear kicks in. You know what I mean? And we never had that.
That's probably been a problem for the last years.
Yeah, but obviously that's a different story, because you know, United, obviously, like I said, when Sir Alex Ferguson's left, when what he had with that culture, that identity, there's two main components, continuity and stability. Yeah, continuity has to do with the vision that you have. And Sir Alex Ferguson has a clear vision when he came into the club, how he wanted to build the club, how he wanted to build the teams, etc., etc., etc. That evolves. But there's a continuity in there. And within that continuity, there is the vision about, like I described, how we want United to play. Like, say, it's like pace, power, penetration, you know, and all that. That's there. The stability is Sir Alex Ferguson, being there for a long, long time, and the staff that's with him. Yes, he's had a few different assistant managers, yeah, with Brian Kidd and Jamie Ryan. Carlos Quiroz, obviously Mick, you know, Steve McLaren, you know, et cetera. So that has changed, but a lot of people underneath there, they were there, you know, with him for 10, 15, 20 years. So those are the two things. The moment that Sir Alex Ferguson left.
Here comes Max.
And then hi, Maxie. And then the changes took place. That meant one of the things is going to go. Because different people come with a different vision. So the continuity goes. Different people bring in different people. Stability goes. And then it takes the time to get that back. Yeah. And that is all based on performances and results. And if they don't come, then people start to ask questions.
I just love United.
And now there's a Dutch manager at Old Trafford trying to build a new culture. First of all, can you teach us the right pronunciation?
Erik ten Hag.
Okay, we'll have you to practice that.
No, but you should, in Norway, you should be able to pronounce it easy. Erik ten Hag.
Shit.
One more time.
Erik. Ten Hag.
Ten Hag.
Yeah.
Was that good?
Ten Hag. That's it. Okay. Here they would say Erik ten Hag, but it's Erik ten Hag.
Can you also tell us how we pronounce your last name?
René Meulensteen.
René Meulensteen.
Yeah.
Was that good?
Yeah.
To work good. With the R's.
But listen, I tell you something. One of the biggest fun that Sir Alex Ferguson ever had with me was when we were on pre-season in America, in Seattle. And we were using the American football team in Seattle's facilities. And they were huge. I mean, fantastic. And they had dressing rooms and all that. And every place where you sit had the name, you know, Sir Alex Ferguson. McFeeling and all that. And every time my locker, my name was spelled wrong. Every time. So it was René Meulensteen with just the U.
Yeah.
And I said to the boss, look at this here. I've been here now for what, 4 or 5 years, and he can't even spell my name. Now, I didn't know that. Next day, I'm going there, bloody hell. Meulensteen with EI. And Ferguson laughing, but apparently he stole the guy that did the board. Changed it every day. So every day that we trained, my name. So every time I ripped it off, you know what I mean? But so like I said, a lot of times my name is It's not pronounced right. It's pronounced right in the language that it's in.
You spoke about pace, power, penetration, and unpredictability. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Can you see some of that now at Old Trafford with Ten Hag as a manager?
Yeah, yes, when they, and that is definitely, those are definitely the same ingredients that he has very high on his list, I'm sure, and especially if you look at the teams that he worked for with Ajax, and when they were doing great in the Dutch League and the Champions League, you saw the same things. And when they are turning it on, you know, with Eriksen, with Bruno Fernandes, with Rashford, with all those players, you see the same things. There's just this vulnerability still, I feel, you know, sometimes at the back that they... We always felt like, we put it this way, when we had performances, Ferguson was always very sharp on that we would never drop under a certain line. You know, whoop, you know what I mean? You could drop, but then, okay, let's get a draw or let's get a 1-0 win. Just drag it over the line, doesn't matter. He always emphasised how important 1-0 wins were. They're going to win you the championship. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that is, I think, the problem if you look at this season now for Eric. It is that too often they've dropped too far.
You would never go to Anfield and lose 7-0.
Huh?
You would never go to Anfield and...
No, that, you know, well, it's not thinkable of, but listen, I can't say too much because we lost 6-1 to City at home. which was a crazy game, and that eventually cost us the league. If you think about it, and that was a free game because there was nothing in that game. I think it was, what was it at half time? Do you guys remember, 1-0 or 2-0? Something like that.
Yeah.
But straight after half time, Johnny Evans got sent off.
Yeah.
You know, and then they scored 3-0 because if you look at them, they won 6-1. They probably only had 7 shots at target, but every single one went in. But then we score 3-1 with 10 men. There goes Old Trafford. That's typical Old Trafford. Hey, no problem. We can do it with 10 men. Keep going. And that was the problem, where we were a little bit too cavalier at that day. And we went forward in numbers at times. And every time they broke, they hurt us. It went in. That was the problem. If we would have probably got back to 3-2, then who knows?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But we should have basically... counted our losses at that time and just said keep it to 3-1 and you know, whatever, but don't go further. And he highlighted that after the game. He says, I tell you every season how important goal difference is, how important it is to score a lot of goals if you can, but at the same time I also highlight how important clean sheets are or not conceding goals. And unfortunately this time round, it signaled the first Premier League win for City, I think, with that one goal difference.
Might have been. Don't count them.
Yeah, no, we do don't. But that was it.
But you believe in Ten Hag's
philosophy and
vision? And do you believe he can actually bring the Premier League title back to Old Trafford?
Well, that's two different things.
Yeah.
Because the first one, yes.
Yeah.
I do think he's a very good coach. He wants to play in the right way. I'm sure that his DNA and the way that he wants to play is very similar to what United wants to stand for. So there's absolutely no problem there. The second one is a different question, because that has to do not only with Ten Hag. That has to do with, obviously, you know, the top players and the players keeping performing. What can he add to solidify that team, that it doesn't go, you know, to thing? Because the one thing is, and with Eric, is when these things is, you know, don't panic about it. You know, I think he manages himself well. He manages himself well in the media. He doesn't overcomplicate things. He's, in that respect, typical Dutch, as we are. We say it as it is. You know, we're not going to go and manufacture some story, but we just say it as it is. And he does that. He does that the same. What he just needs to be really sharp on is that every game, win, draw, or loss, is just information. That's what you get. Losing 7-0 from at Anfield is information. Because look at the first half, we should have been 2-0 up. Yeah, we don't take the chances. There you are. Second half, for whatever reason, we don't turn up. you give them an enormous boost because they were in a difficult situation, and suddenly everything that goes our way goes in, flies in. Might happen, but that might never happen. It's information. So what do you do with that information? That's what he needs to gather, because that is going to be his blueprint for moving on. You know what I mean? For moving on to the next season, because he needs to get it right. Because at the end of the day, for me, Manchester United should always there be the last few games in the game competing for the Premier League title. Mm. That's what United should be, nothing else. Other than that, it's not a good season, unless you are going for the Champions League and maybe winning.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Denne episoden sponset av HelloFresh, og vi sitter jo tre slitne småbarnsforeldre I dette studio med til sammen 6 unger. Og det med andre ord en hverdagskabal som på et eller annet vis skal gå opp, og den gjør jo sjelden det. Og det her, vet du, HelloFresh kommer inn I bildet. For hvor enkelt det egentlig å være kreativ og leken og variert I matveien I en hektisk hverdag? I utgangspunktet det veldig vanskelig, men HelloFresh fikser biffen bokstavlig talt. Jeg har selvsagt benyttet meg av HelloFresh tidligere, og det ikke bare det at det tidsbesparende som gjør at jeg får ekstra energi, det også inspirerende og enkle oppskrifter. Bestillingsprosessen enkel, maten deilig, og alt rett og slett bare fryd og gammen. I tillegg det nydelig matchmat om man ønsker det. Som unolitter kan du få opp til 1779 kroner rabatt på de 6 første matkassene dine, og gratis frakt med første leveranse. Så det bare å komme seg inn på hellofresh.no og bruke koden FRESH United. Dette gjelder for de som ikke har prøvd HelloFresh enda, og for de som tidligere har vært kunde, men som har stoppet abonnementet for minst 12 måneder siden.
Obviously, there's a lot to talk about how Manchester United will get better, and regarding the summer market, what kind of players do you think Ten Hag needs next season to raise the levels even further?
I think they need to be getting very clear about, obviously, I think the goalkeeper situation is one he needs to start address, not only because I really like David De Gea, I've obviously worked with him himself, a lot of experience, done fantastically well. People are judging him sometimes because, like I said, the mistakes that he's made in this season in certain games are so much unlike him, but you have to ask the question, why is that? And that could be because sometimes, you know, you can get a bit stale. You know what I mean? Sometimes you need to, you know, have a new environment, or, you know, to make sure freshen things up. But I think, you know, that's an area we need to look at with somebody that is obviously had the capabilities to handle the Premier League and is capable, very good with his feet, because that becomes more and more important. I still think the back line needs to be addressed, although it's very clear that he fancies Lasina Martinez, which obviously, you know, which is good because he's been a fantastic defender so far. He's a winner. He's a competitor in the left-hand position. He's got a few options there with, obviously, he's got Luke Shaw there. On the right-hand side, he's played a lot of Varane, but he's obviously older, getting on, experienced, serial winner, knows what it is. It's important in that respect that Varane and Casemiro, those are the two players that bring that ingredient into the club, what we used to have. Yeah, it was normal for us winning. That's for them. But again, very injury prone, you know. So I would also look maybe for another one. I don't think, you know, Harry is the answer. And I think if I would be Harry, I would myself look for somewhere else. Mm. The right hand side, with Aaron Wan-Bissaka or Dalot, two different right backs. One gives far more going forward. The other one is very good at defending. But at this moment in time, you need and players that can do that.
Frimpong is being mentioned.
Who?
Frimpong.
Yeah, from Leverkusen, Dutch boy.
Is he any good?
He's a good player. He's a good player, but playing for Manchester United, I don't know him well enough to make a direct assessment to say, yeah, he would fit perfectly well. I would see more of him, because the key with older players to come into Manchester United is that they have to produce that quality. I always used to say to Alex, I say, if we look at players, the thing is this, and you look at two ways to players, looking in players, is being and becoming. And what I mean by that is, if you bring being, you bring Varane and Casemiro and Eriksen, they've been there. No problem. You put them in and they will perform, like we did with Van Persie. But the structure around that particular time with Sir Alex Ferguson and the Glazer family was, we tend not to do that. We were bringing in players 23 or younger, you know, to them. That's becoming. Mm. So they are already being in terms of they're good enough to play, but there's more to come.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So those are the players like Anthony, like Sancho.
And there have to be a mix there.
Yeah, there has to be a mix. But at the end of the day, have they got the quality to make a difference week in, week out? That's the key. That's the biggest challenge for all the players to come United. You know, cannot just turn up one game, yeah, brilliant, you get all the plaudits, and don't turn up the next. That was, I felt, the strongest aspect of the team that we've worked with, was that stability, that continuity, the consistency to constantly hit that high, those high levels. So we didn't get carried away with a win against Arsenal or Liverpool. Great, no, fine. 3 points in the book, next.
Yeah.
No problem, next. And the same thing with Champions League, because the travelling and all that, how we dealt with that, you know, and the way that we managed all that and managed the group. But there was just this constant focus, and again, not get carried away. And that was, to me, a little bit, I'm just saying, a little bit fantastic that United won the Carabao Cup, because that's what every manager wants. Mm. It solidifies, it helps them getting the messages across, da-da-da-da-da-da. And you have to be happy and you have to celebrate it. But I would have not celebrated over the top, because I would have just said, great, very happy with it, very pleased for the players, but got a long way to go.
Yeah.
Don't celebrate it like you won the Champions League. And that, I think, was a little bit the case. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, you know, and United cannot be happy just winning the Carabao Cup, in my respect. So we got one big chance to go against Man City. So which will be a fantastic game to look forward to. But those are the games where you really see the measure of where we are. So going back to the team, a really good midfield player, because obviously I still think, yes, you got Casemiro in there, you got Eriksen in there, Bruno Fernandes, a lot of experience, a lot of qualities, but there's also a little bit of a vulnerability, because all their mindsets are predominantly in going forward. Mm-hmm.
Last year they were looking at De Jong. This year, Gravenberch is being mentioned.
No, I would 100% do everything to get De Jong.
Yeah?
Yeah, because he's got energy, he's got legs. You know, he's tactically very, very good in the build-up.
Do you think Ten Hag can convince him to come this summer?
I, you know, for De Jong, I think, to be fairly honest, if he would have already been here, I think, if he would have not been happy at Barcelona. What has happened was outside basically his, you know, sometimes things happen for political or financial reasons, nothing to do with you as a player, but he's obviously very happy playing for Barcelona, because, you know, that's, otherwise he would have said, okay, no problem, sort me out. Mm. Because there's always a way to fill that financial gap. You know what I mean? That can never be the reason. But I can see why he's chasing him. Yeah, up front, you know, at the end of the day, I think we've got plenty of opportunities and possibilities in the wide areas.
It's a running debate in the podcast: Harry Kane or Victor Osimhen?
Yeah. Well, the thing is this: with them two, if you look at them two players, I think Harry Kane is 100% guarantee you 25 goals or plus. Knows the Premier League. No, it's not too late.
No.
How old is Harry?
29.
Yeah, 30.
He would give you. He would still give you 4 or 5 really good years.
You think so?
Yeah, 100%. He's fit. He's a fit boy, and like I said, United would create more chances than Tottenham do. But
he's happy now. He wants Harry Kane.
That's my preferred choice.
Yeah, no, Osimhen is still again good prospect. Younger, you know what I mean. You need to keep an eye on him as well. But different Italian, different league. He's not a proven player in the Premier League. You know, so in other words, I would always take then, especially because United is still fighting to get back there. You know what I mean? And one player, it might sound strange, can make a heck of a difference. You know, if you suddenly have somebody there, you know, that, and he can still drop off, you know, the front line, you can players running off him, no problem at all. You know what I mean? Because he's good in link-up play as well. It really annoys me a little bit because when Son just came to Tottenham so many years ago, and he's there been how long now?
Many years.
He's
7, 8 years?
Yeah. I felt after when I saw him 1 or 2 seasons, I thought this is the player that United need to buy. Mm.
Did you recommend him to the
Well, I've mentioned
club?
It. I've mentioned it. I've, even the other one that I recommended as well, that was obviously, you know, the story, you know, that I obviously when I left United, I went to Anzhi in Russia with Goose Hiddink. And then Goose left and I took over. But I had a really interesting squad with a lot of interesting individuals. Eto'o, Diarra, Samba was there.
Willian.
Now, Willian, that's the player because I actually rang David because they were looking for players. And I knew Willian was a mad United fan. Because he asked me, he says, can you help me? And, you know, da-da-da-da. I said, I can make the call, no problem at all. And I said to him, I says, listen, Dave, we've got somebody here, Brazilian, can versatile, can play any position up front in the midfield, advanced midfield, commercially, you know, a very good deal as well, but never injured. Great kit, you know. And then Ryan rang me, Ryan Giggs, after, just to follow it up. And I said, Ryan, if there's anybody that you should know that knows what United needs, and it's me because I've worked with you guys, you know, for so many years. He said, believe me, it'll be great. Anyway, it never materialized because then Tottenham came in. And then the relationship between the Anzhi owner, Kerimov, and Ibrahimovic, they sort of hijacked and Ibrahimovic. Now then I said, bring him to me. Yeah. And then at the last day, because I think he was in Spurs to do the medicals. Oh. And at the same day, boom, he went up to Chelsea. So that was a little bit of a 1-2 between them two. And look at him, and Willian has been outstanding for Chelsea.
And he still is.
For Fulham, fantastic. I love to see him play. Absolutely brilliant. Drives with the ball. He's positive. You know, he's great. And that's a shame, you know. You think to yourself, those players could have definitely made a difference.
Going back to Harry Kane, you mentioned Robin van Persie yourself.
Yeah.
Do you think that Harry Kane can have the same impact on United as Robin?
Yeah. Yeah. It's without a doubt. Harry is a top professional. Proved that year in, year out. Even this year in a difficult situation with Tottenham. He's the most remarkable team in the Premier League this year because they kept losing every week and he still stayed in fifth. You know what I mean? Yeah. He never dropped the players apart from the last few weeks. But having said that, listening to Harry in one of his interviews, not sure whether that's going to happen, but talking about, you know, that he need to raise the standards and need to connect with the fans. And he has a big choice to make for his own career.
Yeah.
It is whether to say, listen, I want to become Mr., you know, Mr. Tottenham Hotspur, and I'm going to spend the rest of my career here. And fingers crossed, a manager comes in that could propel us to winning, you know, maybe an FA Cup or doing something. Mm-hmm. Or he's going to say, listen, I've got another really high quality years ahead of me, 5 years. I definitely want to go to a club where I've got a chance, you know, to challenge for the Premier League or maybe another trophy.
What was your role in the Van Persie signing?
Nothing else than because I knew which agency he was with. And they contacted me one day and said, listen, René, just between, like say, off the record, I know Robin is not going to re-sign for Arsenal. He loves to stay in the Premier League. He's made it clear to us that he would love to play for Man United, but especially for Sir Alex Ferguson. you know, what do you think? Could you sound it out? So I just ran it by Sir Alex, and I told him exactly what I just told you. And he says, you know, a little bit, you know, not sure about it because obviously, again, you know, Arsenal, injury record, all the player, blah, 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 blah. And I says, listen, just, you know, don't need an answer now. We don't know how genuine it is, you know what I mean? Sometimes players do it, you know, to get the profile out there, to get a better deal or to go to another club. So we don't want that. Forget that. I says, I can find out how genuine it is. Because if it isn't, then we stop it there. Simple. You have to check with what David Gill thinks. And so they had those discussions. I checked his injury record, which was all gone. It was fine because he played all the games, you know, and was very important for Arsenal. A lot of goals, a lot of assists. And, yeah, I tried to find out as much as I could. And it was he was very honest and he was very sincere. And that is what I got back to Sir Alex. And... eventually, they started to look into it. I've did a little bit of a trick, you know, with some of the senior players at United, like Ferdinand. I would say, listen, if you can pick, you know, him and him and him and him, you know, for next year, who would you pick? And I did it with a few players. And Robin came out on top, you know what I mean? So that was reassuring from our point of view to say, listen, if he walks through the door, then other senior players go away.
Yeah.
Bloody hell, we got another trump card here. And, you know, I also, there was no doubt in my mind that that was not going to work because of, you know, you know, obviously when that all started to come, I had obviously conversations with him, you know. And when I saw him in pre-season and I had a chat with him and how is it? And he said, ah, it's chalk and cheese. It says, sessions here, like I said, but far more intense, but far more, you know, top of it. And obviously he because at Arsenal Wenger did still everything or most of it for the training, and I did it. It's not so Alex, he's just, you know, he's just observes and watches and talks to players. He says, no, love it, he's great. And he hit the ground running. If you look at his first season, was absolutely remarkable. Talking about, you know, straight from the training ground and proud moments, that goal he scored that won us the league against Aston Villa, that was straight from the training ground.
No way.
Really?
I'm telling you, and I explain you how we did it. That was after the session, and I had Rafa and Fabio da Silva. I had Wayne and Scholesy, and I had Van Persie and Chicharito up front with four mannequins at the back, so left back, right back, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And two. And one of the centre-backs was Vlaar, Ron Vlaar, the Dutch boy, international. Mm. And we know him really well, and Robin knew him really well, and we knew that we needed to create moments when there was spacing behind because he didn't like, you know, balls over the top. Mm. So the exercise, what it was this. Let's say somebody was here to feed the ball to the right back. Then this midfielder would, let's say, go away. This midfielder would rotate under. So the moment that happened, they would switch over as well. And this player then would look to him, ball over the top. Now go back to this moment in the game. Rooney got the ball.
Yep.
Over the top to Van Persie, and then to hit it on that volley. I mean, you know, it was just like, you just, yeah.
Describe that feeling when it's textbook from the training room.
Ah, it's amazing. But then for Robin, it was so, it's the same with it, with his shirt, you know. 20, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, 20. And that was the same thing just before the season. And so Alex was asking, Robin, we've got two shirts left, basically, 20 or 21, because we need to put the list in for, I said, well, that's easy. It's going to be 20 because you're here for the 20th title. So you carry it on your back all here so you know what you're playing for, like a joke. And that's how he picked up. He picked up number 20. And although he's only won one Premier League title, but I tell you what, he's made a massive impact. You know, for us winning it.
Your job now is to stand by our new manager.
We're running out of time, Rene. Even Max is exhausted.
Max is flattened out.
One question each, Fredrik, before we...
You can start.
Yeah. This is a two-parter, Rene. Could you tell how you worked with Ronaldo on the training pitch before that 42-goal season? And the second part, how would you work with a player like Anthony to fulfill his potential at Old Trafford?
Well, to start with it, there's two things that triggers every performance is obviously your mind. And a long, long time ago, I picked up this line, where the mind goes, the rest will follow. And there's so much truth in it, because if you, your mind is in the right mindset, it triggers and it directs everything else. And in both situations, also with Cristiano, it was sort of on and off the pitch. It was that where the mind goes, the rest will follow scenario. But also, I wanted to maximize his productivity within in the box, basically. Because what I felt with Cristiano was that he always wanted to score the perfect goal. Mm. You know, the one in top corner.
The world is.
Yeah, the one he scored, like the free kick against Portsmouth, or the one in Porto. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You will always score one or two of them. But the key was, I wanted to get him across quantity. So you needed diversity in goal scoring. So the first thing that I did with him was, off the training pitch, was basically show him, sitting him down, and I showed him a lot of goals scored by Cole, Jorg, Solskjaer, Van Nistelrooy, you know, and just, you know, it was like a 3-minute video, and it was bang, 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 bang. And I asked him, it says, tell me what you see, because it's important that you see it, not me. You know, I can tell you what you see. Mm. And the first thing, I don't know what you mean. I says, we're going to look at it again and ask you the question again, and then tell me what you see. So he looked at more, and then he looked at it more analytical, and he came up with exactly the right things. Most of the goals were scored inside the box. Most of the goals scored was one or two touch. Mm. And there was a variety in goals, headers, volleys, tap-ins, whatever. And I said, these are the three things that we're going to work on the pitch. Now, to do that, to get him more focused and bring him from awareness to understanding, so I'm aware I'm in the box, but do I understand the best options to score? And that process goes in a split second with players, with top strikers, because they calculate very quickly, the ball is coming in, you know, in a split second, it's going to be a one-touch header, boom, in that corner. I mean, that sort of thing. So the more you are aware and the better you understand, the quicker that process goes. So therefore, the execution and the goals are better. Mm. Focus on the execution, not on the outcome. That's how a lot of chances are missed. Yeah? You know where you're going to put it. So what I did, if you have a goal and a box, I put, let's say if this is the goal, I put two lines from the goalpost all the way to the end. And that's what I call zone one. So the goalkeeper's here. It's the best chance to score if you win here, because you got all the corners high and low to finish. Mm. The goal was there. Then I put two lines from this end to the edge of the box and this edge of the box. So that, see, it was, let's say, the left two zone, right two zone. This is the zones where the most goals are scored from, because this is where a lot of players end up. You know, let's say Anthony coming in with his left foot, boom. Yeah, or you're coming this side. It's also, you need to understand that if there's a defender there, better to dribble and beat him on the inside, closer to zone one, because it will increase your chances. So obviously the lines with the back line is zone three, is the hardest. So in this zone, you look more for crosses or cutbacks. Yeah, so these are the most important scoring zones. One, and left and right two. So what I did then, when I was working with him, I had this lined up with mannequins, with flat markers. Mm. And then every time I worked with him, we picked, let's say, in the sessions I did with him when he was suspended, so we did a lot of time, I picked, for instance, four different topics. You know what I mean? So left, zone two. Next one, it was all zone one finishes from crosses. The next time, it was all zone one finishes where balls are played in with a back to goal. So every time, every scenario, we created over a period of time. And that was sort of the two things. So it was like where the mind goes, bringing from awareness to understanding, and then it's put it into practice. Yeah, practice makes perfect, and practice makes permanent, as we all know. Repetition. So with Anthony, what Anthony at the moment stops him from being the problem is probably his own personality. Yeah, he's a fiery lad. You know, he's a bit this
very
and that.
Very confident.
Yeah, confident.
Seems like he's confident.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. He's probably. I'm not saying he's not confident, but he, at the same time, you can also be a little bit overconfident in those positions, because to make him more productive at the moment in his positions is mainly based all on his left foot, and it's rather a finish, not off and across. So you basically don't really get much for that, because you will then transfer the ball and there's nothing going on the outside. Yeah. Not a problem, because then you need players making overlap runs, and then you need to make sure that they have the quality to do it. Mm. But it would help if you could also go on the outside.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know, that's always you know, the most important thing.
Unpredictability.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. You know, and you get that unpredictability for going inside or outside, but also if you can create those, you know, 2v1 situations. Mm. But I think he needs to, how do you say it? He comes across to me that he gets irritated very quickly. You know what I mean?
Mm.
And that can transfer in a lot of negativity at times. And you don't want that. You want him to be positive. You want him to be, you know, good on the ball and find ways, if it doesn't go for you. Mm. Can I play in, for instance, in different positions? Can I come and play more in the pocket and open this space up? You know what I mean? Rather than just stick on the line, because if they stick on a line and you get one defender and another one covers it, basically, you know, okay, just then the only option is left, passing it to somebody else. And that's not where his strength is.
Mm.
You know, learning him, teaching him to make late box runs when the ball is on the opposite side, to making sure he can score goals at the back post. You know, at times he's too passive, you know what I mean? Because the only goals he wants to score on left foot and ping it in this corner.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So sometimes you need a little bit more. But he's obviously a great, great talent, and Eric's worked with him.
Mm.
You know, for a long time at Ajax, so it shouldn't be an issue, in my opinion.
This brings me to what kind of work did you do with the players when it came to the mental aspects of the game? Because you're speaking about his head being too.
To all the players.
Yeah. What kind of work did you do at the training ground to work on the mental aspects? Did you do anything?
No. Well, sometimes when you work, sometimes with individuals and players are all different. Some are very strong characters. Some need a little bit more support, this and that and the other. But the mental side is, like I said, when I talked about all the sessions had a purpose and a challenge, the challenge a lot of times was mental. You know what I mean? People always talk about, for instance, an example, everybody talk about Fergie time. But we did a lot of scenario football.
Mm.
You know, what I tried to say with that is that, okay, guys, this is it. You guys, you're holding on, you know, you're 2-1 up, you know, semi-final Champions League, you know, whatever. They need to score to equalise. There you go, right? You guys also got a man stand off. So, okay, what do we tactically do, you know, to making sure?
Mm.
So those sort of tactical challenges mentally. As well as, I have to say, do not underestimate the power of the personality of the manager. If I ask you, when you saw Sir Alex Ferguson in his prime, what did you see?
Desire.
Yeah.
Passion,
confident, you know, winning, you know, Matt. That transpires to the players.
Mm.
That was exactly what we had in our players. You know, when I looked at, you know, Rio and Vidic, you know, in the central defense, you know what I mean? Patrice with his never-ending energy, you know what I mean?
And it's striking to see how many leaders that were in that team.
Yeah,
and
it's a good aspect that you bring that up, because I think that's also what's lacking a little bit at the moment, a real leader. Listen, again, and there's a lot of discussion about it. I love Bruno as a player. I love him to bits, because he brought straight away when he came in, he brought that what we were lacking. You know what I mean? That quick transition from back to front, put a little bit of unpredictability in play, not being afraid to take shots, you know, creating something. But then in the start, he was always playing with a smile on his face. No, he was always not playing with a smile on his face. And I think he doesn't, you know, he doesn't need that kind of, there's a lot of, again, a lot of irritation there at times. And that transpires. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it's a shame. We don't need that. But the thing, Frederick, as well, at that time, the squad was, you know, from itself. And like I said, one, they had the strongest leader you could think of. You know what I mean? And we had a lot of, you know, really strong individuals, you know, especially in the beginning, you had still Gary Neville. You had obviously, you know, Scholes. Scholes was just a leader on the ball. You didn't have to talk much, but just, you know. So in every different ways, you had different kind of leaders, and they would feed each other. They would feed off each other. That was the big strength, you know. If they felt, hold on a minute, let's get this right, they would be able to. And like I said, when you come to games, when it was getting into Fergie time, you know, the late winners that we scored against Aston Villa, Sunderland, you know, at home, just on the top of my head, City with Michael Owen. It was because the players knew they were entering.
He fell asleep.
Happy. But the players knew because we practiced it. They knew. I always said to them, listen, just think it like that. You got 10 minutes to go, and we really need to put the foot down. 10 minutes plus, let's say, average 4 minutes extra time. That's 14 minutes. Yeah. Mm. Now, if you're really positive, you should get at least 7 to 8 balls in the box. Mm. 7 to 8. If you suddenly go a bit more direct and all this, but 7 to 8. And then depending on what we did, you know, in the terms of the changes that you made. So of those chances, one of them needs to be in the back of the net, or maybe two. Yeah. So if you suddenly go to, let's say, 8 minutes and 4 minutes extra, it's 12 minutes to go. So suddenly you see 5 or 6 balls in the box. That's how you wanted players to think. 4 minutes to go plus 4 minutes extra time is 8 minutes, probably 3 to 4 balls in the box. 4 minutes to go, we're in extra time now. We still should at least get two balls in the box at least. You know what I mean? Mm. That's what I wanted players to think. So what it does, again, back to purpose, they were playing that extra minute or the extra time or the last minute with a purpose, you know, and the challenge of we need to score. So if you prepare them for that, they don't panic. It's the same thing, just to finish off with preparation for penalties. You know, I've done it a number of times, and I've always felt everybody that says now penalties are a lottery and all that crap, rubbish. You make it a lottery if you don't prepare. The biggest thing is what situation is every player in when it gets to penalties? It's high emotional because you just play 120 minutes and there's no outcome. It has to be decided by penalties. Mm. So what do you want? You want a group that is confident, prepared, relaxed, to be ready to go to do those penalties. Mm. And that's why I always a big advocate. So when we get to tournaments like we did in the World Cup with Australia, I started right in the beginning, we need to start working on practice penalties. People think it's miles away. It is. But remember, it gets there fairly, fairly quickly. Mm. So every time you see those penalties, we were always ready. I've always had a list in terms of, okay, what would the list look like if all the best players, penalty takers, are still on the pitch? Easy, 1 to 5, yeah, 6 to 10. Or if we start making substitutions, which are the ones? Be careful that we don't take too many penalty takers out. And who will slot in? Is the order going to change as well? Whatever. So it's all ready. Guys, this is what we prepared for. 120 minutes, 90 minutes plus, extra time, bang, penalties. This is our time. This is the order. And you know the reasons why. Just do your thing. Just be relaxed. Don't get away with a hype or missing or somebody else misses. Wait. Just stay calm. Because if the emotions go like this, you know, the focus goes as well.
Yeah.
Stay calm.
Okay.
So,
is it okay that I finish off with one last
question? Yeah.
Thanks a lot. Who made the biggest impression on you during your time at the club?
Sir Alex.
Is there any key moments that comes to mind?
Every single day.
Yeah.
100%. He was like, and it comes down to what I said before, how can it be that you work as a first team coach for Manchester United with such a highly talented group, experience, you know, winning year in, year out, and you've got the highest of expectations and you don't feel any pressure?
And
the impression was that he was so... Yeah, so good at running the club, managing the people, calm, very good listener, very, very good listener. He wouldn't always go and, you know, we didn't have, you know, I don't know how many, you know, long discussions about things, you know. He would say, yeah, I think this, great. If somebody else, me, Mick, whatever, we would say, well, what about this, what about that? You would take it away, listen about, think about it. Yeah. So every 100%, without a shadow of a doubt, it's enriched me as a person, as a coach, so much. Has been the highlight of my coaching journey, without a shadow of a doubt, so far. Although I have to say that the last experience with Australia at the World Cup was very special as well, because you achieve something with a Bafar, you know, in it, let's say a different standard, a different level, but you not overachieve. I think we achieve what we set out to do, but in a different way, but in a World Cup setting, which I thought was absolutely fantastic. So yeah, very, very privileged, very honored to have served with him.
Are you still in contact with him?
Yep. Yeah, regularly. We text each other today, actually. So good. I met him a month ago. We went to his office to have a cup of coffee with him, and it was just like old days. And if you get him going, you trigger him.
Yeah.
And the stories that come out, that's just fantastic. Fantastic.
Next time, bring him to the podcast as well.
Yeah, well, I'll ask him. No problem. Well, thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot, Renee. Fantastic.
I hope that was all good.
Yeah, we're way into Fergie time now. Thank you so much for your time, Renee. Enjoy the chocolate.
I will do.
And we'll
try a piece now. And see how it goes. I'll tell you now.
Yeah, you have to be honest.
Mm.
From 1 to 10.
Mm. Mm.
Is that a 10?
Yeah, very good.
Yeah,
fantastic. Mm.
Good.
Beautiful.
We'll go back to Norway, Fredrik, and practice to say Ten Hag on a daily basis.
Thanks so much, René, and I'm sure our listeners will enjoy this one.
Brilliant. Thank you so much.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.